Hi everyone. Today I'm going to be talking about a concept called the mother wound, which is a concept I think coined, and certainly I discovered it from a book called Discovering the Inner Mother by Bethany Webster. And I read this book, or most of it, before I found out that I'm autistic. I am aware of the fact that I am figuring out and grappling with a great many load of issues, as we all are. Some of them are specific to being autistic. Some of them are specific to being an unidentified or undiagnosed autistic. Some of those things are about trauma that I have been through, and even understanding that it's trauma. And I think there is a particular trauma in not realizing that you are traumatized. And there is, of course, a relationship between all of those things. I talk and think a lot about my father. I have felt that my life, my sense of self, my relationships, my decisions have all been very heavily influenced by my late father. And they were. But what I have realised more recently, and even more recently than reading that book, is that I have been running from what I now understand is the mother wound, which is not unique, not unusual. It's actually very, very common. And I've been running from that for nearly my whole life, if not my whole life. And certainly as a teenager and as an adult in all of the phases of my adulthood, because I think it is the most painful wound, maybe of all. And I think that may be true, not just for me, but for anyone affected by that wound. And I've been thinking about it quite a lot recently. I have recently become very overwhelmed by my internal state. You could loosely call it mental health or emotional health. You could call it mental illness. And I do. I have become overwhelmed by the intensity, the unmanageability of both the way my issues are playing out in my psyche, and also the way those issues have made me feel emotionally. And I have been running and running and running, racing against this moment for a long time. And I've known it was coming for a long time. And I really had no idea what I could do to prevent this moment coming. And I think I've really had no choice but to let it happen and then stop running. And that is what I have done. And for the first time in my life, my whole life, I have taken time off and out specifically to do that. I have been off work for a week and a half and signed off for another few days. And I have dedicated this time to investigating, analysing, making sense of all of the intermingled, enmeshed issues and experiences, trying to figure out, you know, what are symptoms, what are the underlying issues, what are the root causes of those issues, what can I do? And it's going quite well. I went away for a couple of days by myself to be very, very quiet. I know that there's a lot of inner wisdom in my unconscious, subconscious mind, because it comes through very, very clearly in my dreams. And that was one of the things that I was struggling with, actually, was the intensity of my distressing dreams, my nightmares. I was exhausted. I was exhausted from my dreams. And that week and a half ago, I just, you know, I reached the beginning of the work week after several nights of viciously brutal, relentlessly distressing, awful, awful dreams. And I knew I wasn't well enough to carry on as usual. And I was a bit afraid at that point. I was afraid of hitting that wall. I was afraid of the breakdown. I have been running away from this moment for a long time for a reason. It's hard to stop and face it. It's hard to face the reality of what it could mean. I knew I wanted to run away from everything, but I didn't really know why. And I also know that I have such an entrenched history of denying and neglecting my own experiences, my own needs. So to even identify what my needs are is kind of impossible, or felt impossible at the time. I don't even think I would have taken time off work if I hadn't had some kind of external verification that, yes, I did in fact appear to be too unwell to work. So, as any of you who follow me on Instagram might know, I have been quite productive in my non-productivity. I have really listened. I've really listened to my inner wisdom, which has been so hidden and available to me only through deeply, deeply coded themes in my dreams. And so I knew that it was time to really tune in, really listen to those dreams, rest upon waking, and try to pull what wisdom I could out of them. And that's why I went away. And that's why I've taken this time, and why I'm very deliberately not letting anything else steal this time from me. I think I've done amazingly well to not do a podcast in the last week and a half, but I knew that I had to stop being productive. Just listen. And write out what was coming through. And I made myself a little worksheet, very messy, because my handwriting is very messy because of my dyspraxia, particularly when I'm dysregulated, which I am a lot of the time. So, coming back to the mother wound is this concept that I read about in Bethany Webster's book that I found fascinating, true, helpful. And I recommend reading it, not not only, it's called Discovering the Inner Mother. And actually, I recommend it not only for mothers, because it's not about mothering. It's about being the daughter of a mother. But I recommend it actually for anyone of any gender, because the mother wound, I think, absolutely affects anybody. It just has a very particular intergenerational cycle when it's passed from mother to daughter, who then becomes a mother who passes it to their daughter, ongoing, ongoing. Hence the importance of discovering the inner mother, because ultimately the conclusion is that in order to heal from the mother wound, that daughter must mother herself. That is how to heal, that ultimately we need to be mothered. And therefore, in the absence of a mother who is able to do that for us, we must mother ourselves. And what I like about the mother wound idea is that it is very non-blaming. It is attributed to the almost inevitable dynamics that arise in patriarchal societies, of which, I mean, pretty much all Western societies are patriarchal. They're very much, you know, the accepted norm. You know, nothing is designed or owned fully by women as a population, as a community, on a population level. Women do not have control. So that truth, according to the idea of the mother wound, plays out very destructively in the relationships within a family, where a woman who has learned powerlessness and is traumatized by that and has no means apparent to them of escaping that or changing that. It means that any control that they feel they have can only be exerted over a female child. It cannot be exerted in the same way over a male child, or over anyone else. It cannot be exerted over their peers, although actually I think a lot of this does play out woman to woman. There's a lot of destructive stuff that goes on between women, because of the power dynamics. So it means that daughter grows up being controlled, possibly bullied, or possibly being enmeshed to an unhealthy degree, possibly parentified by their mother in a way that affects their own development, affects their own sense of self, affects their own sense of power, their own autonomy, their own agency. And then what happens? They usually, on a population level, will go on to have children. They will have daughters. It goes on. And so to break the cycle, a person who has been affected in that way by the mother wound needs to be mothered. And usually the only source of that mothering is from themselves. So discovering the inner mother is about learning how to mother yourself. It's not actually about mothering anyone else. And I've been thinking about it because I had an unexpected experience on my little trip away. I went to Glastonbury, which I think is an incredibly unique and special place. It's very, it feels like a very unmasked place. It feels like there are a lot of probably neurodivergent people being themselves. There's a little bit of uniformity also between the people in Glastonbury. You know, we like to feel like we're belonging. So, you know, if you really like hemp clothing and tie-dye and a lot of the things that come with a stereotypically kind of hippie lifestyle, then Glastonbury is probably a good place to be. But I think it's got a lot of depth to it. I think there are a lot of people there who are exploring and developing ideas around identity and community and spirituality and connectedness to the land and connectedness to the past. And so when I went there, my intention was to stay in an Airbnb, which I did. Spend a lot of time alone and quietly, which I did. Not watch any TV or anything like that. Just a little bit of my usual YouTube and stuff. But I also booked myself in for a massage. I get a lot out of hands-on therapies. I find them very soothing for the body, which is important when you're trying to soothe the mind and trying to soothe the emotions in the body. So I booked this massage at this place, not really knowing anything about it. And when I got there, you know, the first thing they said to me is, "Do you know what this place is?" And I said, "No, I've got no idea." And they said, "Why did you choose this particular treatment? You know, you've chosen a 2-hour treatment called the Lady of Avalon." And I didn't really put a massive amount of thought into it. I said that I would really like a treatment. They said this is what was available. I wanted something fairly lengthy. So I just went for it. And it was very interesting because this place, I knew it was called the Goddess House, but I had no idea who they were or what they do. And actually, the Goddess House in Glastonbury is run by an order of priestesses who practice a belief system that is based around something that they call the Lady of Avalon. Avalon is an old name for the area that Glastonbury is within. The land is very gentle, rolling hills. There is the famous Tor, which is a hill in Glastonbury that people like to climb, or walk up rather. It's all very green. It's all very lush. And so the Lady of Avalon is a goddess, I suppose, that has been created that comes from the earth of Avalon, and she is one of the many representations of Mother Earth. I'm paraphrasing here, but that's broadly what they were going for. And so when you go into this building, they have 9 rooms all dedicated to a different goddess, including Brige, she's kind of a saint and kind of a goddess. And I quite like Brige because her day of the year is around the time of my birthday. Anyway, so when I first got there, they first of all put you in this room that's the womb room. It's dark red. There's nothing really in it except cushions to sit on. Lots of pictures of, you know, fertility type things, pregnancy type things. So, you know, in the normal way that I often am, I was quite triggered by that. Part of what I'm working through at the moment is the fact that I haven't had children, don't feel able to have children, even though I want children. You know, I'm very, very conflicted about that. So going into the womb room and being surrounded by this kind of imagery is hard for me. And so I was immediately a bit triggered by that and I started crying, which is completely fine. I was anticipating crying quite a bit on this trip, no problem. But then I thought, wow, I'm in this womb. And that is probably the last place that many of us were safe. And possibly not even then, depending on what was going on. You know, for the person carrying us. And, I also then got to thinking a little bit whilst I was in this womb room waiting about how I feel currently about my mother and about the mother wound. And that has been very complex for me my whole life. It's been very complex for me in the last handful of years, the last couple of years, the last few months. So there were a couple of things basically I realized whilst I was in this building with these priestesses during this treatment and then since then, that I want to talk about, because these are complicated things for us to unpick as autistic people who probably have mothers with some form of neurodivergence, some form of neurodevelopmental condition, probably with quite significant challenges of their own, all of which will have contributed to, probably, the complexity of our mother wounds. Therefore, figuring out what we need to do to heal from that is actually incredibly important for us. One of the reasons that I haven't talked about this before is it's been a little bit difficult before now for me to talk about this without a lot of the anger and resentment of my own experience leading, if you like. And I don't want that. I want to be in a more healed place before I talk about this. And actually, I am feeling more healed. And one of the reasons for that is I don't want to talk about my mother or my relationship with my mother very much. I certainly don't want to talk about it in the way that I have talked about my father, who I think had significantly more agency and power and control than my mother ever had. I am torn between continually, consistently wanting to protect my mother, as well as having a lot of my own anger and resentment from my mother wound. I think I've got to a place now where I can very much appreciate everything that she tried to do for me and give her credit for that. And I have told her about those things recently, which has been really good for both of us. I have more clarity about why she couldn't do more for me and about why she was so absent. And I've got more of an understanding, I think, of what her capability was ever going to be as a parent. I still got complex stuff going on in regards to how parentified I am and how much my mother looks to me for mothering. But I have been gently boundarying in a way that I do believe is fair to both of us, kind to both of us, and in which I'm not punishing her. And I'm letting her get to know me better. And I'm letting her know the truth of how difficult my life has been, without really expecting anything from her or wanting to cause her unnecessary pain. But I still have the wound. My own development was so affected by being either inconsistently mothered early on in my life, early on, or not mothered at all, which kicked in really quite early for me. And this all came to the fore whilst I was in the Goddess Center with the priestesses and having this experience with this one priestess where I had a very gentle, beautiful aromatherapy massage with rose oil, which I love. And what was unusual about this massage was because she was channeling the Lady of Avalon, which I was just very much going with. I was thinking, do I need some love and encouragement and guidance from Mother Earth? Yes, I do. I'll take it. So I was having lots of words of encouragement spoken to me and whispered to me during the massage. Lots of messages about that I'm important, I have important work to do, I'm needed, I'm a magical being, I have gifts. And I was very moved. I was very, very moved to be being massaged so gently and so lovingly, and these words being said to me. And she had said to me, however you want, if you have any emotion that you want to release during this massage, please don't feel embarrassed. She said, I know it seems like a quiet building, but you'd be surprised how noisy it can get with people releasing their emotion. And I was a bit like, yeah, I don't think so. I might silently, you know, weep. But actually it was quite a strong release. And I cried in a way that kind of kick-started the kind of like the breathing. I've been having a lot of breathing issues. One of the things on that day that I signed off work was I guess it is a mode of a panic attack. I'm not really sure. I'm still not sure that I have regular panic attacks. But I get kind of, when I'm emotionally overwhelmed and struggling and scared and unable to articulate what I'm feeling, I get these fast, rapid, racking sobs in my body. I think my diaphragm is probably freaking out. And I breathe in and out very fast. I think my body's kind of gasping for a proper breath whilst I'm crying. And so it all looks and sounds quite dramatic. And then I feel much better afterwards. And it's different, definitely different to an autistic meltdown. That is not what an autistic meltdown is like for me. And so I was crying like that at times. It was coming and going during the massage. And I felt safe and I felt encouraged. And so I let it happen in a way that I never normally would during any form of, you know, the hands-on massage or anything like that. But because she had said, I thought, well, I'll just let it happen. And so my body had a lot of catharsis. And And during the quiet moments of the massage, I found myself thinking, I feel mothered now in this moment in a way that I only felt a handful of times as a child, if that. I feel mothered in a way that I've always needed. At all ages of my life, I felt mothered in that treatment room in a way that I understand that I currently need to feel mothered. And some of this kind of plays into the inner child idea as well. I'm realizing more and more recently, and I've spoken about this on Instagram as well, the inner child has been a confusing concept for me, potentially because of my literal thinking, where I think I have to kind of do a meditation and visit my inner child and imagine giving her encouragement and love and affection, whatever she needs. And then I come back into my current reality, into my day-to-day life as a 43-year-old person. And I don't understand, or I haven't understood, that the inner child is not a past version of me. It's not me when I was a child. It's not even a child. It's just who you are now and what you need now. And I am an adult woman who needs mothering in some form. I need gentle, nurturing, affectionate, encouraging, loving, feminine energy. And that was a really big realization. I was thinking all of that in relation to myself, and I was thinking all of that in relation to all of the many others. Many of whom are people in my life, and then all of the people I don't know, who I know that as adults actually need that nurturing, feminine, mothering energy. And they're not going to get it from their mother, and they never did get it from their mother. And I thought during that session about Bethany Webster's book, which I think is very good, and the concept of discovering the inner mother, which I think is very good. I don't criticize it at all. But I think that it is too much for many of us, or more than we can manage, to find all of that within ourselves only. And I think it's very important, actually, that we find it in others who are able and willing to give it to us. So those priestesses are able and willing to provide that. But it did strike me whilst I was there, and then after the treatment, I was a little bit wobbly, having been very emotional, and they brought me to the Breege room, which is a beautiful big white and green room with an altar and lots of pictures. And I sat in there, and I lay on the floor in there, and I did some stretches for a long time, thinking as well. And I was thinking, isn't it interesting that I've had to go to such lengths, and I've had to sort of buy into, at some level, the concept of the Lady of Avalon, and the fact that she's being channeled, and into this belief system with these goddesses, in order to access actually what was a very simple offering, being massaged and spoken to in that way, and in a safe space full of feminine energy. And it was quite expensive as well. I'm currently making use of a chunk of money that my mother gave me out of the proceeds of selling our family home. She's holding on to the rest because we don't know how much care she's going to need in her lifetime. But I've got a little bit of money to spend, and that's how I got my autism assessment, and it's how I'm doing my Invisalign braces. But when I hit this wall, I thought, I can't put all of the rest of that into savings. I'm going to have to use however much of it I need. And I'm very grateful to have that opportunity. It's come at the right time. So, you know, I spent, £120 on this 2-hour experience with these goddesses. And they tried to recruit me as a priestess. And I think if I'd been in a slightly different life, I probably would have been up for that. But yeah, I found myself thinking, is there a form of therapy that doesn't exist that is specifically just about going to have an experience of being mothered in order to soothe, heal, so that we can come into our adult lives? And I also thought, isn't it interesting that actually maybe a lot of people seek out this kind of mothering a little bit, maybe unconsciously, maybe a little bit sneakily almost. I think I have possibly in my life needed and wanted people who aren't my mother to mother me without it being something that they were able or willing to give me, and vice versa, absolutely vice versa as well. And I've looked for it in places that I have realized I can't have it, and that's okay. But actually, I do have people in my life who are able and willing to support me in a very nurturing, gentle way, which I really appreciate. And by the way, when I make reference to feminine energy, I'm not making reference to gender. I think there is something particularly safe and soothing for me having a gentle, nurturing interaction with a woman. But actually, I have gentle, nurturing interactions with men, including my husband. And that's valid. And that's potentially very healing as well. But because of all of those societal things that Bethany Webster and the idea of the mother wound taps into, I think there is something healing on a sort of a community level, I think, when women can provide that kind of care to each other, whether that is through actual family connection or through friendship. And actually, friendships can be incredibly powerful when they're healthy and when they're honest and when they're not toxic and when no one is doing anything unconsensual or taking anything unconsensually. And as I was thinking all of this, I was taking a lot of encouragement about how I can be mothering to others as well, to other adults, actually. Particularly to other women. And that is a very valid thing to do with my maternal instincts so that they don't go to waste. And possibly a much more fitting form of mothering for me than taking care of children whose needs I find overwhelming and generally very incompatible with mine. So this is where I've got to, and I think I'm continuing to kind of look at the influences in my life, the relationships in my life. And at the moment, I am prioritizing relationships where I am able to access that kind of supportive feminine energy, because it's there naturally. It is there, ready and willing to be given to me. And I accessed and experienced some of this on that retreat that I went to recently that I've spoken about on Instagram. And in fact, I think it was coming straight out of that into my normal everyday working life. It was very jarring, and I just knew I wasn't ready. I had seen a glimpse into a pace and a space, time out, for those 2.5 days with those autistic women. And I just knew I couldn't return to normality from that. I just couldn't. So I'm looking at my relationships and my influences, and it's becoming much more stark and apparent to me now, I think, when there's an influence on me that is too powerful in relation to my own power, where too much is being done to me, where I am being steered too hard, where I am being directed, basically. I just don't want any influences like that in my life at the moment. In the future, that kind of dynamic might not be an issue, because as I heal, as I recover, as I develop, as I become, I will have enough autonomy and agency to counter that kind of influence. But right now, I basically have special needs. I have additional needs. And I think a lot of us do. And that's why I'm making decisions for myself now and putting in place new boundaries. So that's what I wanted to share today. And I hope it is helpful in some way to anyone else. And that's all. And I wish you a great deal of motherly love. Bye-bye.